Herzlich willkommen bei Meditation Coaching and Life. Mein Name ist Michael Kurt, auch bekannt als Curse. Die heutige Folge trägt den wunderschönen Titel Vertrauen in alles, trotz allem. Und darüber spreche ich mit einem meiner großen Inspirationen und Lehrer, Raphia Morgan. Viel Freude damit. Das Thema Vertrauen und Zuversicht ist ein sehr wichtiges Thema zu jedem Zeitpunkt in all unseren Leben. Aber jetzt gerade, in dieser Situation, in der wir vielleicht in den Herbst und in den Winter gehen, der unsicher ist und wir gerade aus einer sehr angespannten, unsicheren Situation herausgekommen sind und gedacht haben, wir können endlich mal wieder aufatmen, es geht wieder los und schon rutschen wir in die nächste Situation hinein. Das Ganze ist gepaart mit Klimakatastrophen, Sorgen über Geld, können wir unsere Strom- und Heizrechnung noch bezahlen in ein paar Monaten, was passiert nächstes Jahr, wie geht's weiter? In so einer Zeit, in der wir sowohl als Gesellschaft, als Menschheit, aber auch einfach als einzelne Menschen eher in Unsicherheit leben und eher das Gefühl haben, dass wir auf viele Dinge keinen Zugriff haben und keine Verfügung haben und nicht mitbestimmen können, was so passiert. Genau in so einer Zeit ist die Frage danach, ob wir eigentlich grundlegend in das Leben oder unsere Kompetenz oder Liebe oder Gemeinsamkeit, ob wir überhaupt in irgendwas vertrauen können. Da landen wir ganz schnell bei Zynismus. Da landen wir ganz schnell bei, nee. Vertrauen ist gut, Kontrolle ist besser. Aber dann merken wir, oh shit, wir können gar nichts kontrollieren. Was machen wir denn da? Okay, Vertrauen ist gar nicht gut. Beschützen, zurückhalten, kämpfen ist besser und so weiter. Und von diesem Punkt starten wir, glaube ich, fast alle gerade, wenn wir uns die Frage stellen, auf was kann ich eigentlich vertrauen? In was kann ich eigentlich meine Zuversicht legen? Ich glaube, wir starten alle von diesem Punkt. Von diesem, I don't know. Und deswegen ist das auch genau der Punkt, an dem ich mein heutiges Gespräch begonnen habe. Mit genau dieser Frage, wie können wir überhaupt in solchen Zeiten ohne Zynismus vertrauen? Geht das überhaupt? Was zur Hölle ist denn da los? Wie soll das gehen? Und die erste Antwort, die ich bekommen habe, hat mich schon ganz schön positiv auseinandergenommen. Denn sie hat einen sehr, sehr wichtigen Nagel auf den Kopf getroffen. Und zwar ist dieser Nagel folgender. Selbstverständlich ist es so, dass wenn wir uns unser Leben angucken, sowohl das große Globale als auch unser persönliches, dass wir sehr schnell 1000 Beweise dafür finden, dass wir nicht vertrauen sollen, dass wir nicht vertrauen können, dass wir enttäuscht werden, dass es gefährlich ist und so weiter. Und wir sind sehr gut in dieser Beweissuche. Und gleichzeitig haben wir alle Momente in unserem Leben, in denen wir sehr friedlich sind, sehr glücklich sind und trotz allem Zynismus und trotz allen Schwierigkeiten in unserem Leben eins sind mit den Menschen um uns herum, die wir lieben, mit der Natur, mit einer spirituellen Erfahrung, mit unseren Freuden, mit Kindern, mit unseren Tieren im Waldspaziergang. Wir alle wissen, dass Verbindung und Einssein und Vertrauen darin, dass der Moment gut ist, dass dieses Vertrauen existiert. Und da wir das wissen, sehnen wir uns danach. Und da wir wissen, dass es existiert, wissen wir auch, dass es real ist. Jetzt kommt wieder der Kopf rein und sagt, ja, aber das ist ja nicht und nicht von Dauer, da und so weiter und so fort. Dann fängt wieder die Beweissuche an. Aber in allen von uns ist die Sehnsucht danach, an so einem Ort zu sein, uns so zu fühlen, so mit uns selbst und anderen Menschen zu sein. Diese Sehnsucht ist lebendig in allen von uns. Bei allem Zynismus, bei allem, in Anführungsstrichen, Realismus. Und wenn wir uns fragen, wie finde ich eigentlich Vertrauen? Auf was kann ich vertrauen? Ist diese Sehnsucht unser erster Anlaufpunkt? Und ich habe schon öfter in diesem Podcast gesagt, und ich sage es auch in dem Interview, wenn wir uns nach etwas sehnen, nach mehr Freiheit, nach mehr Vertrauen, nach mehr Verbindung, finden wir oft als erstes das, was noch im Weg steht. Oder als erstes das, wo wir noch nicht Freiheit haben, wo wir noch nicht vertrauen, wo wir uns noch nicht in Verbindung befinden. Und an dem Punkt können wir uns entscheiden. An dem Punkt können wir aufhören, weggehen und sagen, ja, siehste, geht doch nicht. Oder wir können an dem Punkt sagen, Moment mal, das gucke ich mir mal an. Warum kann ich das noch nicht? Was hält mich auf? Wie halte ich mich vielleicht auch selbst zurück? Nicht nur das Außen, sondern auch ich mich selbst. Und an dem Punkt übernehmen wir Verantwortung. Das bedeutet nicht, dass alles nur an uns liegt und die äußere Welt existiert nicht und alles nur irgendwie unsere eigene bla 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 und so weiter. Nee, aber wir nehmen Verantwortung, wir übernehmen Verantwortung für unseren Weg, unsere Suche, unsere Sehnsucht, unsere Leidenschaft und die Dinge, die uns im Weg stehen. Ich glaube, dass du das fühlst, wenn ich das sage. Ich hoffe es zumindest. Und wenn nicht, dann habe ich jetzt auch noch was für dich. Denn Raphael Morgan hat das nur mal als ersten Punkt gemacht und von da geht's weiter. Wenn du diesen Podcast regelmäßig hörst, kennst du Raphael schon. Raphael ist der Begründer des Path of Love, eines Retreats, das mein Leben verändert hat und mit dessen Arbeit, mit dessen psychologischer Arbeit und auch spiritueller Arbeit, die im Hintergrund von Path of Love steht, ich in den letzten 10, 12 Jahren sehr viel zu tun hatte. Ich habe eine Ausbildung gemacht zum Holistic Counselor bei Raphael und seiner Ausbildungspartnerin Turia. Beide waren hier schon im Podcast zu Gast. Und mit Turia habe ich vor einigen Wochen auch über das Thema Vertrauen gesprochen, wie ich es auch heute mit Raphael tue. Diese beiden Menschen sind, glaube ich, die zwei Personen in meinem Leben, die zwei Lehrerinnen, Lehrer, die mir zu diesem Thema und zu den Methoden, mit denen ich mich diesem Thema nähern kann, am meisten mitgegeben haben. Deswegen freue ich mich wahnsinnig darüber, dass sie jetzt auch hier nochmal mit euch diese Sachen teilen, mit dir diese Sachen teilen, Raphael heute hier. Und wenn dich das interessiert und du das selber weiter erfahren möchtest und vertiefen möchtest, dann bieten Raphael und Turia ein Programm an, das heißt Basic Trust, also grundlegendes Vertrauen. Das kannst du mitmachen, wenn du einigermaßen solide Englischkenntnisse hast. Turia spricht aber auch fließend Deutsch, sie ist Deutsche, also auch das ist kein großes Problem. Und wenn du ein bisschen Mut und Neugier mitbringst, dich eben solchen Fragen zu stellen, die nicht ohne sind, wie der Frage, welche Hürden habe ich mir eigentlich selber in den Weg gestellt, die mir den Zugang zu Vertrauen verbauen? Diese Frage und viele mehr kannst du in dem Basic Trust Programm mit Raphael und Turia erforschen. Alle Infos findest du in den Shownotes. Und natürlich werden wir auch über diese Fragen jetzt in dem Gespräch sprechen. Viel Freude damit und lass dich inspirieren.
All right, so welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Mike. Really good to see you again and hear your voice and your wonderful American accent from a German.
The German-American accent, yeah. Exactly.
No, it's not German-American. It's genuine American. You got like a Bronx accent or something.
You know, when I was studying in the States for a couple of years, and it was close to New York, yes. And when I was in Queens, people are like, yes. Oh, you sound like you're from Brooklyn. And when I was in Brooklyn, people are like, oh, you sound like you're from the Bronx. So everywhere I was in New York, people couldn't. They were trying to decide where they placed me in the other boroughs, you know.
Something to do with New York, though, for sure.
Yeah, of course. It's all that rap music, man, I'm telling you.
There you go.
It's listening to all the Public Enemy and all that. All the New York rap music is where I picked it up. So, hey, thank you for your time. I do appreciate it greatly. And I would love to speak to you about something that's been bugging me. It's been bugging me, I think, for the last 44 years, as far as I can remember, maybe not as much in the first 4 or 5 years of my life, but I'm not so sure. I can't remember that much. And it's the question of trust. And this is a topic that you are very involved with and that you are studying and that you're teaching and that you're building classes and experiences for people around. And it's something that you even name it basic trust. So a very ground level trust. Now, the reason it's been bugging me is because I understand the concept, I guess, you know, and I think that I do get tastes of what it is like to, like, you know, trust. But, you know, the first layer when I look at, you know, do I trust? Who do I trust? How do I trust? My first layer that always comes up very quickly is, well, in this world and in this situation, you know, of the world itself, of the political situation, but also of what your experiences are, what my experiences are with other people and so on. How can we think about this concept, or how can we approach this idea of having a basic underlying trust, I don't know, in God, in the universe? It's even if I say these words, I'm like, oh yeah, yay, you know. So how do we even approach, how do we take the first steps to even approach the possibility that something like that exists and exists within us and we can rely upon it? How do we even start?
Whew, that's a powerful question. And it is, I think we have to at least take a look at, there are moments when we feel this basic trust and we feel like, wow, I'm in exactly the right place where I need to be. I belong here. Everything is connected. There's an experience of peace inside. There's a feeling of lack of separation. And so we note those moments, and those are usually moments that set somebody on a spiritual path where they experience something out of the ordinary reality of separation, mistrust, suspicion, hostility, and need to protect ourselves from all the weird stuff that's going on in the world. And then we find ourselves, for whatever reason, a moment of love, a moment of medicine, people are getting taken in and experiencing this moment in nature, a moment with our kids, where it's just like all of that stuff goes away and we feel like, oh, this is who I really am. And in this moment, I can feel that this is a glorious place. It's not a hellhole. It's benevolent. It's beautiful. And this is where I want to live. I feel at peace with myself. I don't feel like I've got my guard up and my boxing gloves on and I'm ready to, you know, just step out in the world and have to claw my way, you know, down the street to try and get what I want. And I'm going to meet 1,000 obstacles and I'm going to overcome them. The basic living space is one of mistrust for most of us. And it's this feeling of separation and isolation, suspicion, and anything but that we live in a benevolent, loving environment that supports us to be our true nature and to live in harmony and closeness with each other. But we do have moments of it.
Yes.
And those moments haunt us. They do me, and they did me, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was like, in fact, they became like, looking back across the landscape of my life, moments like that would be described kind of as peak experience, even if the mountain peaks were far apart with a lot of desert in between. Those moments would haunt me because what was it that I was feeling in that sense? And I think that's the kind of genesis of the spiritual search, because then you start to question, well, what is that? And if I experienced that then, why do I not experience it all the time? And then you start to cultivate spiritual practices, you know, such as meditation or doing yoga or doing so many of those things which give us a more integrated space and a less defensive space and a less rejecting space, and maybe even a feeling like, oh my God, there's something happening here that I feel connected to that is beautiful and life is good. And then, you know, you step out of the room and then you get smacked by the first incident that comes around and you put your defenses up and you get back into your hostility and you get back into your personality, which is a survival mechanism, basically. And you're in separation. And the separation space for me, it's not very satisfying. You know, so it draws me back to more spiritual practice, and it involves, and it draws me to a place where I want to question myself, why am I so mistrustful right now? Why am I so reactive? Why am I gravitated to all that negativity in the news? You know, first thing in the morning, I can click on and see what horrible shit's happened in the world today, and it kind of confirms a position of separation, and that life is tough, and it also gives me an excuse in a way too to not meet life with my best, because anyway, what is it? It's not going to work out, and there's so much evidence that it doesn't, and yet, the memory and the experiences that I have where I feel really connected to myself come through. And then I start to notice that when I go into that separation space, there's an anxiety that accompanies it. I feel somewhere anxious inside, and it's like, it's not good, it's not right, it's wrong. I'm scared, something terrible is gonna happen. And so I start to become curious about, well, what is that anxiety, rather than to project that out onto the outer environment, gather a lot of evidence of, you know, how fucked up the world is and the people, and, you know, how tough I've got to be to protect myself from them. I wonder about my anxiety, and then comes in that whole thing that I know you're familiar with too, which is inquiry into the experience that I'm having in the moment. And when I inquire into that anxiety that comes with that feeling of separation, I'm usually led back into my personal history. You know, it brings me back into, like you said, I don't remember so much from the first 4 or 5 years, but those first 4 or 5 years and the way we were held, the way our needs were related to the amount of love that we received, is really when we form the personality and the view and the incredible evidence gathering mechanism that, oh, I'm not going to get my needs met in this place, you know? So then it takes it as part of the exploration, looking into that original holding environment, that were my needs met? Was I held with love? Did I relax and melt? Or did I get the impression really soon that nobody's really there for me? And I start to toughen up, and then I just become part of the problem. And to some degree or other, that happened to everyone. Now, I realize I'm just blabbering on here right now, and I'm wondering if other questions are arising.
I love, please blabber. I love it, yes. Because, so the first thing that I gathered that really hit me is that, yes, there is this the world that seemingly reflects to us, don't you trust, you know, you're going to be disappointed, or you're going to be alone, or even if your friends and family are there for you, then the world is such a bad place that, you know, so which is interesting. Maybe we're going to talk about that a little bit. I want to park that on the side, the question that this is different for everyone. Some people might be much more comfortable with the crisis of the world. Other people, you know, other people, but in their personal life, they really lack trust. For other people, it's the other way around. So it also seems like that's a very personal complex of like how you experience this lack of trust, you know. But what stuck with me was the truth that no matter how untrusting we are, there are experiences in our life where we do trust, where we love, and where we feel like everything is fine. No matter what it is, something very small, something very big, we all have these experiences. So I would say the first key would be something like, well, shifting the attention to from the seeming reality of how bad it is to, yeah, that might be true, but there's also something else. You know, how do you feel when you're there? Like, how does that, like, but then you, once again, you fall into the mistrust. And then you're talking about this evidence gathering. That's the second point. You know, you say, yes, there are, I'm holding my newborn child, or I'm standing at the mountain peak, or I just took a nice walk in nature. I feel great. But the butt comes in right away. And then you start finding all this evidence to validate that, yeah, but that's not really real. And that's a fleeting situation. I guess I would love to have you give some advice as to, or an idea as to how maybe, like, when you find yourself in this situation where you're like, yeah, yes, it is, but, and then you start this evidence, like, how, is there a way to hold this space, this open space, this inquisitive space, to hold that a little bit longer, to give that a little bit more space before you fall back into the negative evidence gathering, if that makes sense?
Yeah, because I think once we're in the negative evidence gathering, we're just finding good excuses for being part of the problem, which is separate, which is aggressive, which is hostile, which is negative, etc. And in these days, it is so easy to find that evidence. You know, I mean, I think even particularly in this period of time we live in right now, it's really strong. I find it really strong. I find it destabilizing in myself a lot of times also. But the practice that I have, rather than the memory, because the memory can be a spiritual bypassing. It can be like, oh yeah, everything's one, and like, it's really a good place, and I just have to remember that. And
it's like willing yourself into it, kind of.
Yeah, and you can't, and it doesn't work. You know, it's another mind trick. You know, you can have a practice that cultivates that space, and that you start to recognize your practice, and that you take some time for meditation, and then just the remembrance, say that, you know, maybe your partner is just scared in this moment rather than hating you. And you apply some, and you come to compassion, and then you feel some connection with that person. Or you become really curious about your own reaction, about the loss of that state. Well, what was it that's triggered me now into this evidence gathering and this hostility and this defensiveness and this basically unhappiness? And so that, I feel, is like the first key for me, is as my state changes, if I can shift it from blaming it on some external event which has triggered me and given me this justifiably mistrustful response, to what is it about me right now that is just shut down? What is it that I'm experiencing right now, or that I experienced, that has something to do with me, that causes me to close off? So the responsibility then comes back to myself rather than the outer projection. Because, and I believe the real experience of that kind of peace and happiness may happen in some beatific environment, or with your child, or whatever, and it may seem external, and to some degree it might be, but the real root of it is coming home and back into ourselves. So the first thing is turning that pointing finger around, that old expression, you know, one finger points out and three point back. So then becoming curious about my state change. Why am I so defensive? Why am I so mistrustful? Why am I so shut off right now? Why am I feeling so unhappy? And taking responsibility for it in myself rather than making it environmental. You know, because, and that starts a process, because when I ask the question, why, basically I'm saying, I'm curious about myself and I'm saying, I don't know. In the evidence gathering mode, I know it's that.
Yes.
Because of that guy and that situation and that and that and that. And my response is justified, you know. But when I say, why have I responded so much? There's something that intrinsically opens up in that question, because I'm not coming from a point of view. I'm coming from a point of curiosity. And curiosity has a certain openness to it. And in that openness, I'm available to discover. I may not discover, but I'm at least available to it. And so then I start tracking my own experience inside. Well, this is my anxiety. My anxiety. No, there's a part that wants to reject it. No,
yes.
It's because of that guy in that car in front of me, or it's because of that blaring music, or it's because of
this injustice.
This injustice. I mean, the stuff that happens in the news, you know, and then being really curious about myself, and then being actually able to stay present in the experience of the anxiety. Because I feel that the actual anxiety, if I can stay present with it, okay, I'm anxious right now. It's the last place we want to go, let's face it. It's anxiety, but it's a doorway in if we allow ourselves, I am anxious right now. I'm curious about what it is that's, what this anxiety is about inside of me. Then I start to put the attention back on myself, whether I make it all the way through back to peace and beauty or not, I'm at least not a victim of the environment, you know? And what it starts to uncover a lot of times is like old belief systems and negativity inside myself that came from disappointments in the past, that came from my holding environment as a child, you know, and then the whole paradigm changes a little bit. It's like, oh, this anxiety has something to do with me, has something to do with my life. And then I can start to track things back inside of myself. And what I believe happens when we do that and we take responsibility is that we metabolize some of the negativity that we've taken to be ourselves by just taking responsibility for it. And it, in my experience, when I do that and I stop blaming, you know, and I start being responsible, is that I feel more peaceful. I feel more close to the truth. I'm actually looking for the truth in that moment rather than the excuse. And that makes a huge difference. You know, I'm looking for the truth about why am I this way rather than, you know, pointing my finger at, and I won't use names because there's plenty of them in the news right now. and that's an easy way out, you know. But when I start coming back here and I go, okay, that hateful response inside of me actually has something to do with me. And it's not that that external thing needs to change and is responsible for this feeling I have inside of myself. In that responsibility, there's a kind of ownership and metabolizing of it that gives forth to, and this is my experience, not always, maybe not even close to always, but sometimes it gives forth to that place that does feel connected and does feel present and does feel grounded and does feel solid and does feel like, okay, that is how that is out there. And here I am with myself, curious about my inner experience, wanting to know the truth about it, having the courage to look at it, being willing to stay with it, and even being compassionate towards myself for having that particular experience or that tendency to have that experience. Because, you know, I grew up in a particular environment and developed in that environment, and I have this thing called raphia, this personality. And is that my true nature? Is that my real self? Or is there something deeper inside? And that's where it starts to get into the real movement from personality to spiritual or beingness. And in the beingness, there's not so much rejection, or there's no rejection, I could actually say, of either the outer or the inner experience. And that lack of rejection brings a space of peace inside. And in that feeling of peace, I feel connected to, and I feel powerful in a way of responding that's not just clubbing something, but making a true response from my being. So it's a whole process inside, and it's taken me forever to learn it. And I still fuck it up and forget it and react to things and get pissed off and feel like a victim and get angry at people and all of that stuff. But I catch myself a little bit sooner, like, whoa, where are you right now? What's the truth? What's the real truth about my experience? And the truth is that I may have been a victim of the way my parents treated me when I was a child, and I was very dependent. And I may have developed a particular lens and way to look at the world, but I'm not really a victim right now. It's a familiar, safe place to go to be a victim, where I can point my finger out. And it's like, if only all of that would be different, then everything would be fine here. And ain't the case when it really comes down to it. And that doesn't mean that I don't want the world to evolve and change, and that the things that I see on the news and the things that's happening environmentally and politically and culturally don't affect me and upset me, and that I don't want to support certain causes and things.
Sure.
Just feel good about, but it's born from a different place inside of myself, you know.
I would like to pick that idea up, that what that process looks like from the outside looking in is something completely counterintuitive. It's like, well, I'm looking for trust. Why would I focus on where I don't trust and where I'm hurt and where my trust is broken? Like, why would I even do that? I do that all the time anyway, right? But I would like to stress that point, or repeat that point, or speak from my own experience, maybe, that seemingly like paradoxical situation. It has the power to take you to a very great place. And it's weird, because one of the sentences, or one of the ideas that I really took from learning with you and Taria, is something like, if you're looking for, let's go with David Hasselhoff, right? If you're looking for freedom, then the first thing you're going to find is where you're not free. Right? Yeah. You're going to see, oh, this is where I'm not free yet, and this is what's in the way, and so on and so on, right? And then you can say, ah, fuck that, that's bad, I'm never going to be free. Or you can stay with that, and you can say, okay, where am I not free? How am I not free? And so on. So the first thing you're going to find is where you're not free. And the crazy thing is that, in my experience, it seems like if you're staying with that, and if you're looking at that, and not going to the evidence gathering of yada, 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 you're going into another kind of evidence gathering, or like clue gathering, the more I become familiar with that, how I'm holding myself back, how I'm conditioned, how all that stuff is happening. And if then, if I'm really there and someone would ask me then, do you trust that? You know, do you trust your feeling of, you know, where you don't trust? And where you, that is that something you can try? Like, do you sit in that? Is that a real experience for you? Can you feel that? Can you, you know, I would totally be inside of trust. I would totally, does that make sense what I mean? It would be totally an experience of, yes, there is trust. And how the hell did I end up at trusting my experience and trusting, or how the hell did I end up there if what I was doing is looking at not trusting, you know? Exactly. But in some way, it works that way. It's very paradoxical.
It's paradoxical in one way. But then if you really look at, I mean, what is it that sparks you to be willing to look at, oh, I'm mistrustful right now? There's always already a grain of something in there. It's like, man, I've been in this space so many times, you know, and the more times you go through that process, what you just described, the sooner the remembrance comes that this is something that I can look into and I can feel and I can long for the truth. And like you said, like using that thing of freedom, I want freedom. I really have a deep longing for freedom. And so the being orients you towards freedom, but it doesn't take you to freedom. It takes you to how you're preventing yourself from being free, you know? And so then you get that, then you have to look at that stuff and then be responsible for it, you know? And it's not like I'm not free because and pointing your finger around at the world. It's because I have these limiting beliefs, or I have this old unresolved emotional trauma, or because of this event or that event that happened inside of me, or because of the particular evidence gathering glasses that I'm wearing right now. And in that, I feel there is a real potential to shift from the perspective of separation, isolation, negativity, victimhood, revenge, and further destruction to connection, to contact, to responsibility, to love, to trust, to peace, to contact with something much bigger. And it just happens to work that way, but you've got to start from the point where you find yourself. And a lot of times, that's not too pretty.
Yeah.
Because we did have those experiences, and we did get hurt, and we did close off, and we did develop an even identity around it.
Yes, and we think that if we let that identity go, or if we open up for the possibility that might just be an identity, might be something behind it, it feels like losing. It feels like losing a fight, or losing yourself, or losing what you stand for. Or it's a fear of, shit, I'm going to lose something. I'm going to lose my grit. I'm going to lose my conviction. Or I'm going to, you know, if I even allow myself, you know, to look, oh, I'm going to lose something. So it's another mechanism that really is strong, that really keeps you from...
It's true. It's
opening true. Up that.
And that mechanism is reinforced by a lot of beliefs and self-images and voices in our head that's telling us, you know, stay with that. And I like to bring in at this point that we exist from a personality which was created as an intelligent strategy to survive in the environment that we grew up in. And it can't be wrong, because we did. And it learned the rules of the game of that particular environment. And then it's full of self-images, beliefs, emotions, etc. And that is what I call me and I. And then if you go forth into the world and you enjoy, at least you survive, and maybe you more than survive, maybe you find a great partner to survive with, maybe you make a lot of money, maybe all kinds of good shit comes out of having that personality.
Yeah.
And start questioning it, then there'll be voices inside that will object. It's like, whoa, 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 you know, don't go there, because you might lose something, you know. You're going to surrender the power of your personality for some fluffy spiritual stuff.
Yeah, it seems like a fluffy thing. It seems like I've been, especially maybe for people also that have been dealing with great adversities, you know, with violence or with something like that, to develop a certain persona for protection. Trust is probably not going to be a big factor in that one, you know. And then, you know what I mean? And
totally.
then the idea is like, hey, you know, connect with trust and go back to that. An impulse might be for people to say like, I'm not doing that one, you know, because what happens to my protection and so on. But the crazy thing is, you tell me from your experience, but it doesn't seem to be that is the case. It doesn't seem to be the case that somehow we turn into these fluffy, wishy-washy people, like smushy balls, something. You know, it seems to be like that something, that the strength and the strength and the power sort of goes down to a much deeper, much more genuine level. It's not so much about struggle here, but it sort of drops down. It seems to work like that.
It very well said, because that it's like there's the feeling I'm going to lose my, you use strength and power. And there's a certain personality strength and power that comes across as toughness, that comes across as domination, that comes across as being smarter than, as comes across in all kinds of things. But when we start to question that, and we start to, and intrinsically it has separation in it, and mm-hmm. it has a certain adverse relationship with the environment. And so if we start questioning that, and our quest for truth starts to take us in a direction where it looks like we're losing something, that a certain strength or a certain power or something, there's going to be very strong objecting voices inside that. And so the paradox of it is, and it's, I think it's something you learn in time, is that there is really essential power, and there is really essential strength. And in those things, they're part of our true nature. And in them, they're not having adverse attitudes towards the world and the environment, and they're in alignment with a more peaceful space and a wider and broader perspective. They're not evidence gathering, they're seeing the what is and responsive rather than reactive. So we start to develop a capacity to respond to the environment from a different place. But the process of letting go of, and I think part of that has to be to start to see that, well, this is an intelligent strategy to survive, but we have to feel the pain somewhere in that survival structure that is combative, that is defensive, that is closed, that is easily hurt, that is efforting to exhaustion, that is trying so hard. You know, in some ways, our ego structures, they're really like trying so hard to work it out, but they leave us kind of like exhausted. And when we start to question the whole mechanisms of them and we start to develop some other capacities, start to emerge out of that, and we start to have some compassion for ourselves and the way we were raised and brought up, things that we've taken to be true, and out of that starts to emerge a different feeling of power or strength, perhaps, or a feeling of groundedness. You know, we notice a different quality starts to be there in our relationships, in our view of the world. Doesn't mean we don't still get triggered by stuff. I don't see any end to the maybe there is one someday, but it gets a lot more user friendly, and you start well, I didn't lose my strength. I actually have real strength right now. My strength is not dominating and being right. It's just something that's a resting force here that I can call on, and it can take me forward, and it has intrinsic in it, it has courage, you know, rather than rejection, as an example. So I do believe that there's this tremendous capacity in everyone to make this transformation, but it requires curiosity, it requires courage, it requires compassion, it requires perseverance. Yeah, those are the main components I can think of right now. And I forgot what I was going to say.
That's fine, because it gives me opportunity to sneak in a question. The thing is that what you just said, you said that you believe or that you're convinced that everybody has that capacity to transform that. That also implies, I think, maybe that for almost everybody, or maybe for everybody, there has been a loss of this essential trust, of these essential qualities. There has been, for almost every human being, somewhere along the lines, this conditioning, this loss. It might be different for everyone in its specifics, but it seems to be like that is also something that we generally all have that in common, that all of us somewhere along the way got deterred, we lost it, we were taught certain things that we internalized and so on. So that's maybe also a great starting point, maybe to say that since we all share that, this is a process that we can do for ourselves, but we can also do this together, right? Like we can also do this in the company of other beings, and we can hold each other and see each other in that space. And that might even further our own exploration, because we see other people, we're like, oh shit, this person is just like me, you know?
Yeah, and it accelerates the process also when we bring it out and we learn to be able to talk openly about it. And if everybody, let's say a whole group, we know it from group work we've done where everybody's, okay, I'm in this personality structure, and then we start to inquire into how did I develop these particular defenses, these particular attitudes, these particular beliefs that were part of an intelligent strategy to survive in my basic holding environment, and which were designed to maximize the possibility of getting love and attention and support. And maybe I had to become like my father in order to do that, and so I did, but my father's actually quite a mess, but at least if he sees me behaving like him, he's maybe going to give me, you know, less punishment, less shame, and more acceptance, and so on. So how we're to really inquire into how did that holding environment shape me, you know, and to be curious about it and to see myself as a product of experiences, conditionings, and beliefs, and and to be curious about it and to question it, is maybe there's more to me than that. And then we can use these peak experiences sometimes where we know ourselves. It's like, yeah, there's moments when I'm just like, I feel so open and I see all the colors beautifully, and I could hug almost anybody, or I could, I find myself, my brain switches on and it's more intelligent, or I feel a kind impulse, or that, or I feel like it's all of us in it together rather than everybody
Yeah.
fighting for their place, and then that becomes an impetus to keep going with that self-discovery. And I think we started this conversation by you just talking about it as spiritual practice or something of that nature. Forget your first question, but
So do I. But
yeah.
I'm sure you're right. There's also there's a line that I stumbled across when I was not so much stumbled, it was like right on top of the page, to be honest. But line that stuck with me when I was reading the description of the basic trust process that you're offering, right? So that is something where maybe I would like to go, because I'm not entirely sure. Maybe I do know what it means, but I'm not sure. So I'd love you to say something about it. And the sentence is, this journey is about the astounding relationship between trust and universal love. So without
I remember writing that line. I think it is the experience when we really sit in the gloriousness of basic trust, and we basically trust that this world is benevolent, that this existence, this universe, is loving in its nature, and it requires that openness of that basic trust to be in order to experience that. And then we have this feeling of being part of something really big, or even bathed in it. It can be ecstatic, it can be sublimely, subtly caressed by this experience of universal love. But it really to and it's and I would say it's always there. It's really the basic substance of this existence, and yet we live closed off from it, but we have this opportunity to open up to it. And when we open up to it and we let it in and we experience it, it also transforms us. It also softens our hearts. It relaxes our bellies. It grounds us into this earth. It raises our sense of humor. It heightens our intelligence. It brings gratitude into our lives. It brings the capacity to see the beauty that's all around us. It's like we live in a magically beautiful, beautiful place. And to have that experience of bathing in that beauty improves us. It comes in and it renews us. It's like it recharges all those batteries that are almost worn out in the battle or something, and it makes us value our own lives and the lives of others and the lives of our planet, which I think can be intellectually understood really quite easily, even though a lot of people don't seem to understand it. But
True.
to really actually experience it and be motivated by the way that trust. Read that line to me again that you just started this with, because it's
This
really.
journey is about the astounding relationship between trust and universal love. But you're hitting on it,
And universal love, like you don't ever find any thing that becomes a religion or becomes a real strong spiritual practice where there isn't some understanding and concept and mention of universal love. And that is the state of being really, really wide open to be able to receive it. And that wide openness, what is that? That's basic trust that everything's okay, that in spite of all the things that are going on, this universe is still a place of universal love, and I can be available to it, and I can allow it to touch me. I maybe have to jump through some hoops and climb some fences and you know, get scratched up a bit on the way to it, and all those things. But just even to feel that touch and that contact with the beauty of universal love is enough to, you know, it's a moment you won't forget, and it's enough to motivate a million other actions that you take. So the more people who can find this basic trust inside themselves that this universe is actually a benevolent and good place, regardless of how it looks and the things that are happening, you know, at this point in history, and that I'm part of that, and I'm not separate from that, and it can, and I can open up and it can touch me, it's going to change the way that I behave. It's going to cause me to have conversations with other people from a different place. Maybe some of that comes across to somebody, and then that person takes something, and maybe somebody listens to this podcast and goes, you know, what a crock of shit that guy's talking. Or they go, oh, there's something in that. I've known that. And, you know, I want to know some more. And so in this course that we're going to do, we're going to be talking about these basic dynamics of losing basic trust and the pain of separation and existing in that, and then doing meditations, inquiries, and exercises to open up and experience it and be able to see this extraordinary relationship, you know, with universal love and basic trust, that they're really like one thing.
That's perfect. Thank you very much.
Well, Mike.
That's it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, wonderful. Fun.
I could talk in circles, but no.
No, I think it feels like it just went, you named it. Oh, I'm getting goosebumps in this room. That's a good sign.
Wenn dich die Themen aus diesem Podcast interessieren und faszinieren, dann lade ich dich ein, auf www.curse.de zu schauen. Da findest du sowohl das absolut kostenfreie Programm Die Fragen deines Lebens als auch den Bad Meditators Club Gib dich selbst niemals auf und viele andere Dinge, die ich anbiete, mit denen du noch tiefer gehen kannst. Für diese ganz spezielle Folge lege ich dir das Basic Trust Programm von Rafia und Turia ans Herz. Du findest alle Infos dazu in den Shownotes dieser Folge.